You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight at 7, it's the Moth Radio Hour. Tonight, four stories of lessons learned, lessons of sharing, flirting, parenting, and more. That's coming up after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, a massive trove of documents was leaked from the John Doe investigation into Governor Walker's recall campaign and published yesterday by the Guardian newspaper. The documents reveal that Governor Walker was actively involved in raising money for the Wisconsin Club for Growth, a super PAC that provided support to Walker and other Republicans in recall elections.
The documents also include information about donations from a lead paint manufacturer and laws passed in the Republican-led legislature to shield makers of lead paint from liability.
In an interview today, Governor Walker declined to confirm whether he's still raising money for the Wisconsin Club for Growth or other third-party groups.
With us now is WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. Sean, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sean, I know you were taking a little bit of time to look through some of the documents available, and what have been the big narratives, the big stories to emerge from this leak?
I mean, from a Wisconsin perspective, where we've been in touch with this investigation for a while now, and this some of this stuff has made news for a while now. The big takeaways for me was just the volume of information out there and really kind of the surgical precision with which The Guardian approached this story. I mean, they highlighted all these portions in the documents that were relevant to the story, and you did get this larger picture of Governor Walker being a very active fundraiser on behalf of the Wisconsin Club for Growth. That's significant because while candidates for state office have to report their donations and face contribution limits, donors to groups like the Wisconsin Club for Growth can give unlimited amounts of money and they can keep their donations secret. And so the governor was actually referring to the Club for Growth in one email as our C4. It's a reference to our 501 C4, which is basically saying that the club is his in so many words. So there's a pretty strong link there between the governor and the Wisconsin Club for Growth that plays out throughout all these documents.
And based on what we knew of John Doe 1 and 2 over the years, which was limited until now, is that a surprise, seeing that close proximity?
We knew there was a connection. It was no secret that Governor Walker's one of his own campaign advisors, a longtime campaign advisor, R.J. Johnson, was working simultaneously for the Wisconsin Club for Growth. So the link was pretty obvious. I think the degree to which Governor Walker was personally soliciting funds for the Club for Growth is illustrated more in these documents here. I mean, we should mention that one thing we do know, because this has already run its way up to the state Supreme Court, is that what he's doing in these emails under Wisconsin State Supreme Court's interpretation of Wisconsin campaign finance law is legal. Under the law of the land right now in Wisconsin, what the governor is doing here, soliciting donations from billionaires, like John Menard's, talking to John Menard, saying, "I got $1 million from John Menard today." Menard's then cutting a $1 million check to the Club for Growth. Under the state Supreme Court's reading of campaign finance law, that's not prohibited, but it definitely raises eyebrows because it's the kind of thing you don't read about.
And that's a law that was changed just last year during the John Doe investigation. That wasn't the case, correct?
So what the court said is that essentially this, the court's read was that that's always been the case. But once they ruled that and that that was the law in Wisconsin, then the legislature and Governor Walker followed it up and essentially codified that ruling and made that the law of the land in Wisconsin, not only through that Supreme Court ruling, but in the statute books.
You mentioned the name Menard, and I guess that seems like another surprise in these documents, is that for the first time we're having access to the list of these donors that we hadn't before, because the Wisconsin Club for Growth was allowed to leave the donors anonymous. So who are some of the big names on this list?
I mean, John Menard is one of the ones that jumps out to us in Wisconsin, not only because we know the Menards chain, but, the size of the donation there and kind of the nonchalant way in which the governor refers to that donation. The Guardian chose to highlight donations to Donald Trump, or from Donald Trump, excuse me, after the governor met with Donald Trump. One of the other donations that made news in Wisconsin that we haven't heard about before was donation from an executive who ran a company that once manufactured the lead used in lead paint. And there were a total of $750,000 worth of donations made to the Wisconsin Club for Growth over a couple years in 2011, 2012. During that time, you had Walker signing a pretty sweeping, you know, tort reform law that shielded companies that once made lead paint from lawsuits, made it very difficult to sue them. And then in 2013, the legislature took another step. They inserted a few lines in the state budget without much fanfare, and that's essentially made it hard to sue lead paint companies retroactively. That is, even if some of these kids who filed lawsuits for lead poisoning and filed it before the law had changed were already in the court system, this law would have applied to their cases retroactively.
And we should point out that the prosecutors in this case have appealed it. It's before the Supreme Court, and we'll be hearing whether or not the U.S. Supreme Court will take this up. When might we hear, and how likely do you think that is?
Yeah, I would yield to your next guess on that. I mean, as far as when the U.S. Supreme Court acts, it's sort of a mystery to those of us who don't watch it on a daily basis. I mean, this is a case that we're keenly interested in here in Wisconsin, but it's one that's been going along. From a Wisconsin perspective, this has been going on for a while. I mean, John Doe has its roots kind of in John Doe 2 has its roots in John Doe 1, which began, you know, before Governor Walker even took office. These cases have been out there for a while, and so that seems to be the final resolution is now before the U.S. Supreme Court.
And Sean, before we let you go, what has Governor Walker said about this?
Governor Walker had an event today in Edgerton, and he called the leaks old news, said they were an attempt by people who had lost in court to win in the court of a public opinion. And he mentioned that he had been, you know, this investigation had been essentially cleared by the U.S. Supreme Court. They ended John Doe, which is true. I mean, that is absolutely true. The court said there was nothing, no wrongdoing here, and that this type of coordination is legal. At the same time, the governor really didn't want to talk much about the coordination that happened, and at his stop in Edgerton when he was asked whether he still raises money for the Club for Growth the way that he did in these emails, he didn't answer. He did say later at another stop today that he's not raising money for them right now, but it's not something that he ruled out doing in the future.
And I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court, you said U.S. Supreme Court there. But
yeah. Okay. So, I mean, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has ruled on it. The U.S. Supreme Court, we're still waiting.
And developing story. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That was WPR Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. And Richard Hassan joins us now with more on the leaked documents. He's professor of law and political science at the University of California, Irvine, and the author of the book, The Voting Wars. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So what do you make of this, the takeaway of all of these documents and seeing the vast amounts of money involved? So what do they tell you?
Well, I think what this shows us is that all of the suspicions people had about what was going on behind the scenes were actually borne out, that this was really a fully coordinated effort involving the Republican governor, involving his staffers, involving state legislative staff and Republican-oriented lobbyists in an effort to win a series of elections, including a state Supreme Court election and various recall elections. And in exchange for some of this money, these business groups and wealthy individuals were getting access. They were getting legislation passed that benefited their financial interests, and they were, because they were using this C4 organization, they were assured of anonymity from the public. Sure, the Scott Walker could know and feel very appreciative of this, but the public did not get the benefit of knowing who was donating money that was being involved in these various election campaigns.
And a lot of these donors, they're not anonymous anymore, thanks to this leaked trove of documents. How do you think that anonymity, when it comes to the large amounts of money that we're talking about here, how does that affect the political process?
Well, one of the reasons that people like me favor disclosure is that it lets voters have a sense of who is trying to influence elected officials. So if, for example, it was public that people with an interest in the lead paint litigation, which involves, many people, children who suffered from lead poisoning and other maladies from lead paint, if the public knew that $750,000 was in this campaign or in these campaigns backing these Republican legislators, and in exchange or even just afterwards, we see all kinds of legislation being passed that helps these interests, well, then the public would have been able to use that to be able to judge whether or not these elected officials should remain in office. Without that information, it's very hard to know and really hard to follow the kind of stories when there's all of this going on behind the scenes.
We had the author of the original reporting from The Guardian join us on the program yesterday, Ed Pilkington, and he said in a section of his piece about why it matters, the concern was whether these large corporate donations had the potential to distort the democratic process, and that was a big question for him. Would you agree with that?
I do think whether the money is disclosed or not, large amounts of money can distort the political process. That is, you and I may have very intense interest in public policy and what the state legislature should do or what Congress should do, but when someone has $1 million, they're going to have at least a chance to make their case. So even putting aside bribery and any improper action, it just means that the wealthiest among us have much greater ability to have influence over who's elected and what policies they pursue. And those concerns are just exacerbated when the information about the money being given is fully known to the politicians, but not at all known to the public.
We're talking right now with Richard Hasson, professor of law and political science at the University of California, Irvine School of Law. And we're looking at the leaked John Doe investigation documents, which were published yesterday by The Guardian newspaper.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you make of what you've seen of all these documents? What does it say about politics and government here in Wisconsin? Do you see these kind of donations that are now being released as affecting the state of our democracy? What do you think about the leak itself, possible investigation into who leaked it in the works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation about the documents published yesterday by The Guardian newspaper, revealing information gathered in a John Doe investigation from here in Wisconsin during the recall elections.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you read these new John Doe documents or about them? What does it say about how we do elections here, about election laws? Do you worry about the impact of corporate donations and how laws are made? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Post on the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
Richard Hasson stays with us. He's professor of law and political science at the University of California, Irvine School of Law. And Richard, we were mentioning earlier that this is a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll find out whether or not they decide to pick it up and run with it. So wondering your take on this. Do you think that's a likely scenario?
Well, it's never likely just looking at the law of numbers. There are thousands of petitions filed, and the court only hears about 80 or fewer cases a year, and they're even probably going to hear less now that they're shorthanded with a 4-4 liberal-conservative split. But I should point out that there are really two issues before the Supreme Court, and the court could choose to hear just one of them. And I think that is a fairly likely possibility if the court decides to hear the case. So one issue is the issue you've been talking about, which is whether or not the First Amendment prevents regulating cooperation between candidates and these non-disclosing groups that are engaged in election-related activities but that don't expressly advocate, say, vote for or vote against. So that's one issue. And that issue is somewhat mooted by the legislation you referred to, where the Wisconsin legislature has kind of changed the rule to make what the Wisconsin Supreme Court said was required, constitutionally required, part of the law. But the other issue, the one you haven't mentioned yet, has to do with the judges who sat on the state Supreme Court and who decided the case, including Judge David Prosser, who's recently retired from the court. He was, as is clear from the documents that were posted by The Guardian, a great beneficiary of the spending. The Republicans who were circulating these documents were very interested in maintaining a Republican majority on the state Supreme Court. And because of that, because he was this great beneficiary of the spending, Prosser and other justices were asked to step aside to recuse themselves. They refused to do so, and the argument is that that is a due process violation, that you can't have someone with such a personal interest in the case being someone who's deciding the case. And that issue could possibly interest five justices on the Supreme Court to hear the case.
Prosser has said he didn't recuse himself, Justice Prosser, because enough time had elapsed where he felt the conflict of interest was not as acute as it may have been if there was one earlier. Is that likely, as the Supreme Court looks at that, to be something that would make them less likely to take it up based on his argument?
Well, Prosser has said that in some interviews. Prosser himself didn't file a brief in the case. He's now retired from the court. I don't find that argument very credible. Certainly, it could have been a great source of embarrassment for him had all of this information come out about all of this fundraising going on to his benefit. And the fact that it was a few years later, at a point where we didn't know if he was going to retire or not, indicates that he would still have a personal interest in how the case was decided. And the Supreme Court has said, as a matter of due process, you cannot have a judge deciding a case who has a personal interest in the outcome of the case. This wasn't just a theoretical question. He was directly implicated in these documents as a great beneficiary of the spending. And so I think if the Supreme Court decides to take the case, again, that's a long shot for any case, it's more likely to do so on the question of the fairness of the panel of judges that heard the case rather than on the campaign finance issue itself.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Chris joining us in Milwaukee. Chris, hi.
Hi. My question is, to me, it seems like it's corrupt government and it's pay to play. But I'm just wondering, for people who are either entrenched Republicans or entrenched Democrats, if they hear this, is it even going to make a difference as to your opinion as to how they would vote? Would it affect their vote?
Chris, thanks a lot for that. And Chris is getting at sort of the ennui and disenchantment surrounding politics right now. Congress with a record low approval rating, people not very big on Congress or politicians in general. So is this going to make a difference, Richard?
Well, it's hard for me to say, but one thing that's pretty clear from my watching Wisconsin politics from afar for these, say, the last 6-7 years is that your state is one of the most polarized in the country. And people are, I think, quite divided between Democrats and Republicans. One of the things you haven't mentioned that I think is one of the biggest bombshells from the release of the John Doe papers was in relation to the David Prosser, Justice Prosser reelection campaign, where it was very close and going to go to a recount. You had Republican operatives exchanging messages saying that they should basically gin up talk of Democrats engaged in widespread voter fraud in order to undermine the case that Democrats might make that there should be a recount, or that Joanne Kloppenburg, who was at one point narrowly ahead of Prosser, should be declared the winner. And so it really shows a kind of cynical manipulation of the process. And looking at that as Wisconsin voters, I think a lot of Wisconsin voters are not going to be happy when they see the politicization of the counting of the votes in your state.
I'm going to take another call here. We've got John on the line in Iron River. John, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to share?
Well, all the corruption that runs around, and we dance around the words, but it's out-and-out bribery. That's all that it is. I don't see how that's going to end.
John, thank you for the call. And there is whether or not these things will be seen as running afoul of the law in Wisconsin. So far, the answer to that is no. And there's also the appearance of how these things look to people. How do you kind of split the two, Rick?
Well, in terms of bribery, nothing in here indicated a kind of quid pro quo if you give me $750,000, I will pass this piece of legislation. But that's, you know, so that kind of conduct, that kind of smoking gun did not appear, at least from what I've seen, of these documents. But that doesn't mean that other laws were not broken, and it could well be that had you had a fair panel of the Wisconsin Supreme Court that was not did not include judges who were personally involved in the case, they might have indeed concluded that this was illegal coordination, that is violation of campaign finance laws, even if it was not a actual kind of bribery.
Thank you for that call. And another quick call from John in Madison. John, hello.
Hello, this is John.
Yeah, what did you want to share, John?
Yeah, I think maybe your guest answered it for me, because with the current campaign finance laws being changed, if in fact the governor had broken campaign finance laws, say in 2012, he still can be held accountable for what took place in 2012. That's what I'm trying to verify. That always seems to be skipped over.
Got it, John. Thank you. And Rick, your answer briefly.
Well, it's certainly possible that the Supreme Court could take the case and say, you've misunderstood the First Amendment, and so it is legal to ban this kind of coordination, and then they would send the case back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court to look at again. It's not clear what would happen in that circumstance.
And we leave it there. Rick, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Richard Hassan, professor of law and political science at the University of California Irvine School of Law. And he joined us to talk about the new leaked documents in Wisconsin's John Doe investigation.